Today's program is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Did you know that Wisconsin wins more national and international cheese awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello and welcome to a remote episode of Cutting the Curd. I'm on a park bench with my friend Jordan Edwards in San Francisco. How are you, Jordan?
Doing quite well.
Super happy to have you on here. This is Fancy Food Show and CMI weekend. CMI is amazing for the 10 people that listen to this podcast that don't know what that is. It's this amazing international competition that our friend Adam Moskowitz created. That's now a bi-coastal thing. Want to say congrats to the winner, Rory.
Crushed it. It was really fun to watch.
Awesome.
His food service stuff was the next level. You can tell he put in prep and work, which I think is the base of this industry is prep and work. So it's that's all we want to see is thought and prep. Always prep.
Totally. When I go to the CMI, I'm always just amazed because I'm so old now and I didn't have all my peers. I didn't have an event like that when I was coming up. I still work at the counter every day, but my friends are all either 15 years older than me or 15 years younger than me. So you guys should be super happy and thankful that you have each other in that event.
I'm super grateful for it. As far as the culture of mongering goes, I think it's a great thing to keep cultures changing and you don't get Fodge that way. Good cheese reference there for you. If you're doing CMI, you should look that one up. It's a dome of people that you don't get to be in a room with ever, and they're all doing the same thing you do daily in a different part of the country, and it's getting to see how many different options you have of how you wrap French fold versus not. It's diaper wrap versus a Bedford wrap, which is a mind-blowing East Coast versus West Coast versus Midwest thing that's fun to track the lineage of. And it's first-hand knowledge from the people that make the cheese that you nerd out about every day on your counter. So that's one of a kind. I don't know where that happened before, and if it ever did.
Well, it definitely didn't in this country, and you won the contest, so congratulations, and you persevered. You had entered a number of times. Do you feel you got better every time that you entered?
Yeah, absolutely. So they give you this packet at the end of it. If you're sober enough and smart enough, you take that packet home and you read it, and it's really critical, but it's because they've had 5 minutes to give you notes, and they want you to improve. And if you take their notes to heart and don't get bummed out that they didn't like something that you thought was really perfect, because it is kind of subjective, but at the same time, it's a room full of people that you can trust their opinion. And the first year was a hot mess. I get told that every time by James Gentry. He was you were a nightmare kid. I'm glad to see you put in the work, and I'm glad people noticed. Second year, I managed to get on stage and then epically crumble. It was great. And then last summer, 2017, stars aligned. I threw some pennies in a river, cracked some coconuts. It was really helpful. Thank you to the Santeria stand and Estes Market and Saxelby's. That was a good, relaxing way to go into it. I was I don't know. Visit shops when you travel.
Coming to New York City to relax, is not something I hear often. My life is just constant stress. Yeah. I've been traveling all over the place myself. That's really incredible that you're able to notice the levels. Not incredible because people don't. It's just great to hear it articulated and to watch yourself grow in a way where, like you said, there's some subjective parts to your job anyway. How customers interpret your service, how you deal with them, how you wrap things, how you fold things. In comparison to the other places and their preferences, that's all subjective shit. Yeah. None of that matters, really, right? The end, the fundamentals, and the real deeper meaning of what you do. At least for me, that's always what kept me going, especially through 15-hour days.
I think the thing about CMI is because it is such a marathon of it's all parts of cheesemongering in an extreme pressure cooker version. I mean, those food service rounds get tougher every year. The technical test, I took the CCP, and it's a hard test, but it's very doable. There's never been a perfect score on the CMI test, and it's never going to happen. I'm convinced. I've seen very smart people look ghost white after taking that test because it shakes you. But then also, it's like your person. It's a chance to shine with, like, you know, some people are like, I rap cheese better than everyone else, and it shows. Like, if you come in and crush that round, like, people cheer the loudest for getting a perfect quarter pound cut. That's a silly thing to cheer for, but it's not. I don't know. It's really cool.
See, I think that's the most important. In my time watching the CMI, and then I could not compete in that. They would have to be holding a member of my family hostage, and it depends on which family member that was. I still might not go and compete. That's how much anxiety like that it gives me. Yeah. But I think it's so impressive that you guys are able to do that, and you gals are able to do that, and I'm super proud of the people that worked with me that got to go and compete, and they take it seriously, really seriously. Yeah. We entered Eric Shack this year, and he was so into it. He did great.
He's you know? Second. Like, yeah. He did really good. He's another person that, like, seeing his arch as, like, a person who competed side by side with him on a stage, and then getting to, like, judge him, because I got to judge this year, and it's like, it's such a cool two sides of the same coin. And his arch has been amazing. And, like, I couldn't be prouder for him. It's like Shaq Attack. Like, yeah. Like, really great to see.
It's good that you have one of the things and one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, and you talked to me about it a little before, is that this is a show. I'm a cheesemonger. That's what I am. No matter where I am, that's what I am. It's all I've ever been. It's probably all I'll ever be. And that's a great thing. It's probably the best thing I can say about myself. But we interview a lot of different kind of people on Cutting the Curd. And sometimes we interview a lot of cheesemakers. We go through places where we interview technical people, and, you know, people who work in and all around our world. But I haven't talked to a cheesemonger in a minute. And what do you think? What do you think, man? Do you foresee yourself, and this is a corny question, but I don't care, I'm going to ask you anyway. Like, do you foresee yourself doing this always? And if you do, why? What keeps you in it?
If I can figure out a way to participate in this capitalist system and raise a kid and be a cheesemonger my whole life, I would be a dream come true. I don't see myself ever leaving unless I'm, like, forced to by other life circumstances, because it's a job that's connected to people. It connects you to people that do your job, but also the farm, the person milking cows, the people making cheese. After a couple years of this, you start looking at your case differently, and you start seeing faces and not wheels. And that moment is, like, just real. Like, I have goosebumps, like, literal ones. It, like, makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck still every time I look at that case. And it's like, oh, that's, you know, Chris Raleigh. Oh, that's, like, Andy Hatch. Like, and then having a frame of reference, like, Gutensberg is one of my favorite Alpine cheeses and supported by Columbia. And I ate dinner with Rito Gutensberg and, like, watched the man from try to use chopsticks for the first time in his life. Like, I will remember that forever. Like, introverted Swiss cheesemakers using chopsticks, like, that's life-changing. Like, it's wild. It's a wild industry where I don't think you see that kind of first-person connection in a lot of trades. Like, a union carpenter, which is a trade, doesn't know where that fucking 2x4 came from. It's a 2x4, and I have a 2x4 that is a person and special and living, and there's a science behind it and a history, and it, like, it spans a world that never ends. It's like it is a universe. Cheese is a universe, and it hasn't ever gotten boring. Every job I've had is, like, I've fizzled out short attention span. Being a line cook, you can only make the same menu so many times. Sauteing something. Every day in a cheese shop is different, and that's why I love it. Okay.
That's great, but it is a job. It's a beautiful dream. That's awesome. It's just an awesome way to live.
Yeah.
Everything you do, you make. If you're of a certain mindset, and when you get into it, I think after you've done it for a while and you've handled the cheese, that's the best part about being a cheesemonger. That's what these people, they get paid more, they do other things, but you get to eat and handle all of the cheese. You're the one. You're the one who touches it most of anyone, including the maker, as soon as it leaves them. You know, you handle it, you give it to the customers. And so when you talk about the CMI and you said, you know, it's foolish to cheer, you're joking, for someone to making a quarter pound cut or a half pound cut. See, for me, that's what I watch most when I watch the CMI.
It's the most exhilarating round.
Well, I just think that the people who have the technical skills to handle the product, those are the people who are the ones who will stick around the longest. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. You have to have the foundation. Like, if you can't uniformly slice cheese into a serving, you need to go cut a bunch of root vegetables until you can, because cheese is an expensive product with hours of work behind it, and you need to, you, there's no bullshit. You have to respect it. It's like a very, it's worthy of your respect. Every cheese under the sun has a place in my heart. I eat more brick cheese than probably anyone outside of Wisconsin. It's all good and all deserves care and respect. And like, we're the first line. Like, we're combat medics and like special forces all at one. It's kind of rad.
Today's program was brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. What do you think of when you hear Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds. Delicious, fresh and squeaky cheese curds. Or deep fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Uplands Cheese, the farmstead cheese company behind Pleasant Ridge Reserve. I think of delicious stinky Limburger and its long storied history. I think of Dunbarton Blue, made by master cheesemaker Chris Raleigh. I think of Ross Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Championship Cheese, and Satori's Black Pepper Bellavitano, the 2017 U.S. Championship Cheese. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, with lush grasslands and a glacial water supply that produce the very best milk. Fourth-generation cheesemakers combine old-world tradition with new ideas and the highest standards to make innovative cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
When I talked to you initially, you listened to the podcast, which is awesome. Thank you. We talked with our friend Jason Hines about the tasks versus work of cheesemongery, and you said that you liked that episode and you listened to it.
Yeah.
And that's what one of the main reasons I really wanted to talk to you, because did that help you, or do you see it that way as well, tasks versus work, how we laid it out that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great foundation for it, and like, I don't know, I think if you're ever going to take some advice about how to handle work and task, like Jason Hines is a pretty good resource, about many things. But yeah, I mean, it's like, it is work, but at the same time, it's like, it's rewarding if you put your heart into it. It's one of those things that you get back what you put in, pretty evenly. There's not a great, it doesn't take your soul, it helps your soul, personally. I mean, those shirts and tote bags, like the cheese, last night, cheesemonger saved my life. First time I saw it, I was like, I guess. And now it's like, yeah, being a cheesemonger, like, totally is, like, the reason I'm not, like, a complete degenerate. It, like, made me want to be together, because you have to be together and centered. You can't be, like, flying off the rails, because there's too much detail. That's the base, the detail and foundation. I don't know.
Well, if being balanced and centered is a good cheesemonger trait, I have no idea how I've lasted as long as I have, because I've been all over the place. But what brings me back to do the job, to get out there on the front lines, put out my sanitizer every day, lay out my clean towels, make sure all my knives are
bleach long.
Yeah, things like that is because that's what keeps me from going completely out of my mind.
Yeah, it's, I mean, like, the, I do definitely love the sense of setting up your station in the morning, like, and knowing that those towels are there. Like, you can't count on a lot in life, but if you fold those towels and put them there, they're going to be there if you folded enough of them, and hopefully you thought about that when you folded them. And, like, I know, I love those little, like, the routine and the kind of, like, monastic, like, it's very monkish in the best way. As a man of the tribe, I'm sure monkish is not, like, the actual term for that. But when I read Cheese and Culture as, like, one of the first managers to ever give me the time of day gave me a copy of Cheese and Culture, and it changed my life. His name's Matt Whalen. He was, like, best thing that ever happened to me. That book, and there's a whole part about Benedictine monks that just made me really want to, like, dedicate myself to something fully, like, vow of poverty, like, whatever. And, like, if you're good at it, that vow hopefully gets a little less tough for people, especially if you want to make a career out of this. It's like, at the end of the day, it is a business and it is work. But, like, it gives a lot back. Like, it really does.
Do you now, because you've passed through, you've evaluated yourself, you've put yourself out there against other people who do what you do, and you triumphed. You got to that spot. Do you give that back to the mongers? Do you train people to be like you?
I hope I can. Like, I mean, I have a couple people that I'm really proud of, that I've got to work with over the years that I've seen grow. At CMI, like Alex Armstrong from Mission Cheese, we worked together for a couple years, and that was like, we have this like really great like co-mentorship. We mentor each other. Like, those relationships are really special. And I mean, there was four people that at CMI that I had spent years with day to day doing those tasks, and like seeing them shine and getting to flex. You're flexing your muscles that you've like built up, and it's not like, I'm not a muscular guy. It's not a muscle you see on your body. But, like, I was able to, like, the 80s Arnold Schwarzenegger without the misogyny, like, flex. And it was so good. And it felt so good. Like, I don't know. Like, it's the coolest.
Yeah.
And, like, watching people grow and, like, hopefully helping them learn how to do those, like, repetitions and, like, how, like, I don't know. I don't go to a gym, but, like, where they, like, help you lift weights so they don't crush you.
Yeah, the spotters.
The spotter. If you can be someone's spotter and you can make them better at just, like, that one thing and coach them or give them that tidbit that, like, makes that step and that repetition of their foundation less, like, sore and, like, an easy thing to repeat, you've changed the world in my book. I don't know. Like,
no, it's true. I just ask you about that because, in the end, what I figured out for myself, and maybe it's true for you, is all that we have as cheesemongers. Like I said, that's what I am all the time, first and last. And I can prove that, you know? And so all you realize is that what you have is each other. So if you don't create more of you, if you don't give so much back to all of those people who want to be where you're at, then you're just fucked up. You're not doing the right thing. I really feel like I went through a stage of precociousness because of my environment, and I thought that my information was for me to parse out to the people that I were worthy of knowing what I know.
Yeah.
And that was so stupid. That was so stupid of me. And when I see things like the CMI and those communities and then the encouraging nature of what it does for people, how it brings them together, that's just fantastic. Does it make you feel good to create more use? And do you understand how vital that is to the success of what we do?
One of the things at CMI that you really see is this like lineage of cheese, because there's like these really iconoclast shops and people there. And then you look and you're looking and it's like, you see the people standing next to them that are their like colleagues, and it's like, oh, you came from this part of the room. You guys all know each other because you all were in the trenches at some point. And it's like, you know, cream rises to the top, but like they're also grabbing people up with them. It's an industry that like sharing knowledge, I think, is so important. And I feel like we're in culturally, cheesemongers are in a place where like we want to share. And I think the internet's helped a lot with that. Cheese Science Toolkit, like Pat Bukowski, all these resources that even like 6 years ago weren't there. And like even just being able to point someone in that to a URL is like life changing. Versus,
do
like,
you send them there?
Oh, absolutely. If your first week, if you don't hear like, by the way, the Cowgirl website, by the way, the Murray's website, you can search cheeses there and they'll give you accurate information about rennet. Like, you want to know if something's vegetarian rennet and the sign is missing it, or you can't find the whole cheese label, the Cowgirl website, Murray's website, Cheese Science Toolkit for like some foundation science. Like, man, there's like so many great resources. Like, also like following other mongers, seeing how they plate, seeing how they curate their shop. Like, I love seeing the regional differences there. There's like, it's hard to talk, it's talking about a visual thing on the radio, but how you wrap cheese with Saran. New Yorkers do it in the air because retail spaces are fucking tiny.
It's goddamn, there's no room there, man.
No room. I'm from the Midwest. Retail spaces are a little bigger. I have a big soapstone counter. I put a square down, and it's East Coast people really love saying this term, diaper wrapping, which is, it makes me feel dumb because now I'm a diaper wrapper. I don't know what other generations of mongers call it, because there's definitely some like generations now. To me, that's the Bedford wrap, doing it in the air, because like the people I know who did that all spent time at Bedford.
Well, that the initial shop, when we opened the initial first store, was in a closet. and there was no space. I don't know. I think that's really interesting for myself. I don't know what I never had anyone to learn. Like, I didn't. No one showed me what to do.
Yeah.
So I learned. I rap my own way, and I rap cheese my own way. And so the mongers that work with me at Eataly are like, I don't know what the fuck you're doing, but I'm not doing it that way. You know, I'm like, sure, no problem. Yeah. This is the only way I know how to do it.
Man, I didn't see a French fold until 2015. You know, like, I didn't know what that was. I had to have Mark from Formaticum tell me what a pleat was to, like, he was like,
sure.
And, like, I made him do it, like, 10 times. And, like, I don't think I fold very many other ways now because it's so efficient.
Well, yeah, I learned that when I worked in Paris at a caviar shop, yeah. And they fucking yelled at me until I could do it, and now I refuse to do it because I hated those people.
I'm that way with the first chef who showed me how to dice an onion. I won't do it his way because I thought he was like
a douchebag,
Napoleonic asshole,
and yeah. He probably was.
No, totally.
that's the idea.
Yeah, as soon as I found a chef that I liked that showed me how to dice an onion a different way, I never went back. But
and that's funny. It's funny. I mean, I've had some hard mentors. And I've had some soft. I feel like you need a little bit of both. Absolutely. And I'm sure those ball busters, those old school guys, as long as they, the misogyny is super tough. And that's not my way, obviously. And I also never had to deal with it because I'm a man. But I mean, I didn't mind the boot camp mentality. I didn't mind people yelling at me because it made me hard. And it also taught me what I didn't want to do.
Also, like, again, yeah, like as large white male, I don't have a lot of the negative connotation of the old school kitchen.
No, I'm afraid of you.
I didn't have, I mean, like, I'm stubborn and thick-headed, so, like, the people that I learned the quickest from are definitely, like, the ball-busting, like, I'm gonna throw your badly chopped prep at you to a certain extent. But, like, it's also can be, like, that doesn't work for everybody. Like, there's some people that if you do that, they shut down, and you've just, like, also made them now hate this thing that they could love. So I think in cheese, like, one of the things I noticed right away with training is, like, there is a certain amount of, like if you belly split a cheese, like, comté in front of me, like, I will roast you like lamb at a Greek Easter. Like, you're in so much trouble. But, like, I then am going to, like, tell you why in an appropriate, like, way with a good metaphor that hopefully you never forget. And if you do it twice, I don't know what to do. I've never had to do it twice. Thank God.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, you have to gauge the person, and training's really hard because, like, especially, like, I work for a multiple location place with a fair amount of employees from lots of different backgrounds, and that's one of the things I like about cheesemongers is, like, there's people with doctorates that sell cheese. I have a GED and I'm doing the same thing, and we're on the same level.
Yeah, or they work for you.
Yeah, or, like, I
ask that feels God. Good.
And, like, yeah, it does kind of feel good without getting egomaniacal.
I didn't look when I was a kid. I was a manager and I had like 3 Harvard graduates working for me, and I loved to fucking boss those kids around. It made me feel good. I'm not gonna lie. It was good. It was good because it was a great equalizer.
Yeah.
In that environment, I was the one in charge, and it taught me a lot about myself, not in an arrogant way, but it just evened everything out for me. And when I was that age, when I looked at people in a different way, and I did it through the cheese counter because that's where I grew up, is behind the cheese counter, I just saw them all in a different way, and it made it easier for me to work with a lot of different kinds of people because of the disparate nature of cheesemongers' backgrounds.
My favorite thing for, like, the PhD kids is, like, if you don't have any food service background, is, like, you have to learn how to sweep floors. It's something I've noticed. The higher your education, if you went straight through education, the more you're just pushing a pile of dirt and spreading it, not collecting it.
Amazing.
It's one of my favorite things to, like, if it was a social experiment, I think it would be someone should do it.
Well, efficiency is a need-based item. Yeah. You know, it's a thing you do because you're working against the clock. Those people, they own the clock, so they don't have to be like us.
Yeah. Or, like, they're striving to own it and realize that, like, that clock is a wheel that can crush you as well.
Yeah, totally.
Which is why, like, I like those. And I also think those people bring a lot to shops. Like, every person that has an art history degree that's a cheesemonger can tell you a really cool fact about, like, old European cheeses that I love learning about. Like, I don't necessarily connect things to certain periods of time the same way. And that's, cheese has made me interested in history in a way that, like, a teacher never was able to. And it's like, that connection is really cool. And I think those PhD doctorate people are needed to, like, you need me because I can show you how to do set up a three compartment sink and stack dishes in a way that won't be in your way during service until you get a second to wash them. You need them because they can tell you about, like, Napoleon and, like,
well, they can entertain you while you're setting up the sanitizer at the right pH
They lean and stir their tea with wildflower honey.
We talked so much. I love tea. Talked right through the break. We had no break in this show, which is fine. They can figure that out later because I really, really enjoy talking to you. Yeah. I just want to ask you one more question because and it's just a closer. You know, what would you tell a person that wanted to be a cheesemonger, to do what you do? What would you tell them is the one thing that they can't forget when the times get tough to help you push through?
Man, look in the eyes of a customer when you give them a sample of cheese that makes them go, whoa. Like, I feel like every monger has, like, an epiphany cheese story, but my favorite thing is to share that with a person that, like, only buys brie. Like, brie is delicious, but, like, there's a whole world out there. And if you can get that light switch in their brain to flick, that little twinkle in their eyes and, like, that sense memory that they're having is really fun to vicariously live through. And then also, like, at the end of the day, I can duck down behind a cooler and I can eat something, like a little sample of something that I never would have ever experienced if I didn't work in food. Like, I wouldn't have been buying $36 a pound cheese. I do now because I know it's, like, this is an amazing thing. Someone had to flip that switch, though. And, like, I don't know. Look for those moments. Take the little successes. When you cut that quarter pound, pat yourself on the fucking back. Like, I don't know. That. Find the thing that is rewarding to you and then relish in it.
Awesome. That's a good place to stop, Jordan. So lucky to talk to you. So awesome. Great to know you.
Fun. Thank you for having me.
Stay tuned for more Cutting the Curd. Later.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.